Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Joe Zimmel and Valerie Friedman.
From Connecticut Public Radio in Hartford, this is Seasoned. I'm Robin Doyon Aiken. If you're like me, you've got your go-to tools in the kitchen. That super sharp knife that chops onions oh so fine. Or that heirloom wooden spoon that feels good in your hand. But what about your smartphone? Social media platforms like TikTok and Instagram are a new kind of kitchen essential. You're probably getting a lot of your cooking tips while scrolling. And you're likely one of the hundreds of thousands of people tapping those hearts on the content shared by our guests this hour. Coming up, we talk with local folks who are social media megastars, content creators, influencers, whatever you want to call them. They've built virtual communities around their food content, and they're doing what they can to have a positive impact on their fans and followers. Later in the show, producer Tegan Engel introduces you to the siblings who turned the Muslims of the World Instagram community into New Haven's newest cafe. We'll also get to know the man behind the Damgram and the Dam Talk. Yes, David Milton is here. You know him from his new restaurant alerts and his videos spotlighting the best everything in Connecticut, from pizza and empanadas to tacos and donuts. Here's a taste from a visit to Casey's Provisions in Wallingford.
This might be one of the most iconic grilled cheese sandwiches in Connecticut. A grilled cheese sandwich has no business tasting this good. The ASMR on this is crazy.
But first, our mom friend in the kitchen. Kat Ashmore is the chef, recipe developer, and digital creator behind Kat Can Cook. She's a Connecticut native and the author of Big Bites, wholesome, comforting recipes that are big on flavor, nourishment, and fun. Kat, congratulations on your first book. It's been out for about 5 minutes now, and it's already a New York Times bestseller. So this just goes to show how loved you are by all of us home cooks. I'm so happy for you, and thank you for joining us. Welcome to Seasoned.
Ah, thank you. It's been a dream. I'm so glad to be here.
You begin the book, Big Bites, with the sentence, "It all started with a salad," which, of course, is the understatement of the year. Can you share the story of how you started your blog and your TikTok account and what prompted the creation of Hungry Lady Salads, perhaps the thing that you're most famous for?
I started my business in 2020 and really started on TikTok. I launched a website at the time, but it was pretty rudimentary. Really, TikTok was what kind of put me on the map and expedited this whole journey. I'm very clear about that. You know, the opportunity to go viral across so many different states, countries, was something that was pretty foreign at the time in the world of social media. So that really gave me a huge opportunity. And then in January 2022, I came out with my first Hungry Lady Salad. And at the time, I didn't overthink it very much. I was looking around beginning of January, thinking to myself, you know, everyone has new year, new you on the brain. Everyone wants to feel better in their clothes. They want to have more energy. They want to be sleeping better. But where do the people go that don't want to follow a specific diet and they just want to eat better? They want to eat more veggies. They want to have their family eating more whole foods. You know, there's somewhere for them to go if they're keto. There's somewhere for them to go if they're paleo or vegan. But what about if you just want to eat better? And that felt like the space for me to step into, because that's very much the way that I eat. So I launched this Hungry Lady Salad, I called it. And the concept was really these big meal in a bowl salads that satisfy you, are really interesting, really flavorful, have a lot going on, but were simple to make and oftentimes would just hang out in the fridge for multiple days so that you had a really delicious, exciting lunch waiting for you. And the response was pretty wild, and it continues to be.
There's this underlining feminist energy running through your work, and it's this idea of being a hungry lady, of owning it, being unapologetic about it, celebrating it even. Can you talk about why it's important for you to put yourself out there, actually eating your food with big overflowing spoons and with gusto?
It is very much my own personal journey to a degree. And at this time of my life, I really now see that there is nothing more beautiful and nothing sexier or more feminine than a woman who really owns her passions and surrenders to a really lovely experience, oftentimes just for herself. And so part of it was a bit cheeky in response to some criticism that I faced and sometimes continue to face, but around a comment that I often received was, "You look like such a lady, and then you eat these big bites of food, and you're too pretty to be eating like that on camera," and things like that, that were sort of these backhanded compliments. And I don't get offended by those types of comments. I really get curious about it. Like, there is a conversation here that is happening, and I feel like it's an opportunity for me to be a part of the conversation and maybe even change that conversation.
Yeah. Your journey from TikTok to a community of millions of home cooks is really fascinating. So I wonder, how has social media played a role in connecting with your audience? And how do you see it influencing the way people approach cooking?
Social media has played an enormous role in me being able to present content in a way that feels really intimate, and it feels like a collaborative effort. It feels like a real conversation. And I'm so grateful for that, because there are many places to go if you just want recipes. If you don't ever want to see a human, you can go to lots of different websites, lots of different social media accounts. Mine is very personality forward. And I think because I, over time, developed this relationship with the people in my community, many of whom are women, and I share my own vulnerabilities, I share my own story, it develops a level of trust and a real energy that we are in this together. I'm not talking to anyone from a soapbox. I am not preaching. I am not dogmatic about a lot of the things that I share. It is very much a two-way conversation.
Your crispy crackle chicken is one of your most viral recipes to date, which is kind of surprising because it's just a few ingredients and salt and pepper. So, like, easy, right? Why do you think certain recipes resonate more than others? And do you have a sense for this when you're recipe developing? Or are you surprised too when something really takes off?
At this point, I do have a sense of when something is going to resonate. It really comes down to what is going to feel accessible, what is going to feel familiar, yet different enough. So that is really where I think my cooking shines, because I do use classic techniques. I'm classically trained. A lot of my recipes have very classic roots, just done with a couple of updates and twists and maybe combining ingredients that are familiar, but in unique ways. And the crispy crackle chicken was something that, it's basically a crispy chicken cutlet. Who doesn't like that, right? But it's lighter because it doesn't use flour, and the coating sticks really well to the chicken, again, because you're not using flour. And I find that when you're using flour, when you're doing the standard breading procedure of using flour, egg, and breadcrumbs, oftentimes when you're flipping the chicken, an entire sheet of the coating will come off. When you're not using flour, it really adheres to the chicken breast quite well. And I also think because I was using stale bread to make a quick, fresh breadcrumb. And people really like knowing how to use up ingredients to waste less.
Mm-hmm. I always love knowing about the early formative experiences that chefs have that put them on a path. I know you cut your teeth working with Martha Stewart. I'm wondering what that experience was like and if being around that kind of fame helped you at all to navigate your experience of being famous for your cooking now.
Very much so. Not only that, but it taught me a few things that I carry with me and that I think about often. first of all, you know, having been a food producer on her television show, that meant that I had a good amount of one-to-one contact with her, conversation with her, and rapport with her at, you know, 8 a.m. when she was making an espresso in her Crocs, you know, before hair and makeup and all of that started. So it was a much more intimate space to be in with her. Being on live television with someone of that caliber, that poise, that talent, that personality, once you've been on live television with Martha Stewart, you won't be nervous to be on any program ever again. Because people will ask me, I was recently on Good Morning America. I did QVC for a year. You know, how are you not nervous? And I said, I work for Martha Stewart. So, you know, that paved the way for me to kind of feel like, all right, I've got this.
I really appreciate the honest discussion about your journey around your years as a stay-at-home mom, because I see parallels between the ways that food was a creative outlet for you during that time, but then also a crutch, and the ways that social media can make people sometimes lonely, but it was a gift for you. It fostered confidence and community. I mean, you call your followers social media family, and that's no small thing. So I'm wondering, how do you see your online community impacting you, and what do you understand is your impact on the people who are fans and followers and people who engage with you on your social medias?
I think it is a great privilege to be in a place of influence. And I don't take that lightly. I know some creators don't like the term influencer. I think it's a huge privilege to be an influencer in any space. I learn so much from my community. And I think that my brand and my followings really grew when I really just started listening. When I started asking questions, what are you struggling with? I started helping people identify their problems, helping them solve their problems, and doing it in a spirit of, we're on this journey together. So I think that that has been really key. I used to plan out my content well in advance, like a traditional food blogger and content creator might do. Now it is much more spontaneous because it's like this lasting conversation that we're having, almost like we're FaceTiming. And then my next video is picking back up and we're talking about something else. And it's just this ongoing conversation we're having rather than, these are the 10 things this month that I think that you should care about.
You identify as a flexitarian, and your book is a celebration of foods that are wholesome, to use a word from the subtitle. There are some meat recipes, but also lots of veggie-based recipes in the book. A standout for me is the sweet potato and black bean chili. How do you strike the balance in creating recipes that satisfy both meat lovers and vegetarians? And really what I'm looking for here is like the tricks you use to appeal to carnivores in your plant-based meals.
You know, I was very much inspired by my father, who went on a bit of a health journey, and he's a meat and potatoes loving Irishman. And he would say, you know, that something is good for you because it doesn't taste like anything. And I took it as a challenge to create food that he would really enjoy eating. And I knew that it had to be hearty, really flavorful, and also have some familiarity, things that felt comfortable, and I really meeting him where he was. And I think that that's my approach with a lot of my cooking. I am always talking about building flavor. Anytime you're taking out sugar or fat or any of those things that do provide flavor, but also may not make you feel amazing. And by taking out, I mean cutting back on, right? So I'm always looking at how much can I push this? How much can I take out the sugar without it impacting the integrity of the recipe? Anytime that you're doing that, you need to be inputting flavor and often moisture, because fat does a lot of different things. So I think understanding the science of that, and I love to sort of nerd out on the food science. A lot of people don't, so I do that for them when I'm creating my recipes. But really coming at it from a place of abundance. One example is the hot chili oil noodles with kale chips. I had a woman who messaged me and said, I made the hot chili oil noodles with kale chips, and my husband has never, ever eaten kale. And he had two bowls of it, right? Because it's a big slurpable bowl of noodles that just happens to have kale in it. So it's not either or, it's more.
Oh my God, I love that. I love cooking secrets and secret ingredients and hacks and all that kind of fun home cook stuff. And my favorite ones from your book are the use of seltzer water in your frittata for lightness and nutmeg in your spinach dip for warmth. That's kind of like what I think of as a restaurant chef trick. So what are a couple of your go-to tips and hacks from your cookbook that you know home cooks would love to know, and it's the stuff that we never think of on our own?
Oh my gosh. There are many, but I will say the chimichurri meatballs are a recipe that people have been making a ton. One of the things that makes that a different type of meatball is, yes, it has a chimichurri spin on it, which is really just a beautiful fresh herb and garlic and shallot sauce. But you're folding the sauce into the meat mixture. So you've got half of the sauce is getting folded into the meat mixture and flavoring it from the inside out. And then the other half is used as a dipping sauce or a drizzling sauce. So people are really going crazy for that. I will do that with tomato sauce as well. I have a recipe on my website for tomato sauce stuffed meatballs where I'm literally folding the sauce into the meatballs. So that's something that people really love, where they're like, I know what marinara sauce is and I know what meatballs are, but I've never thought to do it that way. Also, really just looking at veggies in a very different way as sort of being this main character of our meals and all of the different ways that you can stuff them with grains and with other veggies or meats. And again, the spirit of more. Another thing that people love, the salt and vinegar smashed potatoes. That is a similar concept because we are imparting flavor into the potatoes as we boil them before we roast them, by boiling them in a mixture that has vinegar in it. So you're getting that salt and vinegar potato chip kind of flavor from the inside out.
Oh, that's so good.
Oh, they're delicious.
So of course you make the most gorgeous looking salads. I want to make all 18 of them from the book over the seasons. That's another thing too. The book includes lots of recipes that are just perfect for a certain season. But I want to point out too that your homemade dressings are the things that are making these salads sing. So how do you go about creating dressings and sort of encouraging your readers to make these dressings too? Because they make all the chopping, slicing, and dicing and peeling of those salads all worth the effort.
It makes a huge difference. And one of my favorite things to hear is people saying, I haven't bought a salad dressing since you came out with your first Hungry Lady salad. That is music to my ears. Because I think a lot of times, especially as women, we've been taught that salad dressing is bad for you.
Yeah.
And it can be. It can be filled with all kinds of stuff. But there's been a lot of stress about this. So people omit these good dressings, end up going for something low fat or, you know, no dressing at all, and then wondering why they are struggling to get through their lunch. And nobody wants that. You know, if something isn't enjoyable, you're not going to be consistent with it. And wellness and feeling good and eating good is really about consistency, building these new habits. So when I'm looking at any recipe, but particularly salads and salad dressings, I look at it as a story that has different characters that interact with each other and bring out different things in each other. You need all of them to really create that well-rounded flavor that just makes a delicious salad dressing. So oftentimes, you know, we have creaminess. Sometimes it's yogurt. Sometimes it's part mayonnaise, part yogurt. Then we've got acid, whether it's from vinegar or limes or lemons or even other kinds of citrus. And then sometimes we have spices, but we've got fresh herbs in there. And then some kind of sweetness oftentimes, even if you don't taste it, just to round everything out. Sometimes there's mustard, but each ingredient is like a character that is really necessary to bring out the best in the others.
I love that. So on behalf of every woman who's ever been told that she doesn't eat like a lady simply because she's enjoying her food or because she eats for pleasure, I just want to thank you for your work, including this book, and for being someone who spreads joy on social media in all the ways that you do. Thanks for being a light in the world, online and in real life.
Oh, thank you for that. I love talking with you.
That was Connecticut's own Kat Ashmore. She's at Kat Can Cook on Instagram and TikTok. And her cookbook, Big Bites, is out right now. Kat shared recipes for those chimichurri meatballs and one of the Hungry Lady salads she's famous for. Find them on ctpublic.org/recipes. I'm Robin Doyon Aiken. It's time for a short break. When we get back, producer Catrice Claudio is in the studio with David Milton. He's also known as the Damgram.
I have a lot of people who say, I try everything you post, or I try to get to as many places as you post, and I think it's great.
This is Seasoned. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford Healthcare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford Healthcare. ECMO is a leading-edge, life-saving treatment for patients with cardiac or respiratory failure. Dr. Jason Gluck, director of the Mechanical Circulatory Support Program and Emergency Cardiac Care at Hartford Hospital, explains what it is.
So ECMO stands for extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, outside the body oxygenation of blood. It's a life support technique that's used by highly sophisticated medical systems for patients with severe heart or lung failure. The technique involves removing blood from the body, oxygening it, and then returning it back.
ECMO procedures happen in the ICU, but not all hospitals are equipped with the necessary technology and staff. Dr. Gluck describes Hartford Hospital's ECMO Go team.
So ECMO is considered when treatments have failed, and in our center, with a special ECMO on the go team, we'll actually take that technology to their hospital and help them out there if they need to stabilize the patient and then bring them back to heart for recovery.
For more information, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
These might be the best nachos in Connecticut. Got the birria, we've got guac, some pickle jalapenos. The gatekeepers of this place are gonna be mad. Y'all people who is gatekeeping this place, wait until I post this video.
Welcome back to Seasoned, everyone. I'm Robin Doyon Aiken, and that was our next guest, David Milton, enjoying his meal at Birria Mia in Meriden. He's the Damgram on Instagram and the Damtalk on TikTok. He's from Hartford and has over 180,000 followers across his social media platforms. He shares high-energy, hunger-inducing videos, spotlighting mostly mom-and-pop restaurants across Connecticut. No, he's not an expert videographer or food stylist or anything like that. But if he comes to your restaurant with his drone cameras and some lights, you're about to go viral. We wanted to get to know the man behind the camera. So David popped by our studio to talk with producer Catrice Claudio.
Welcome, David. So nice to see you. I'm used to seeing you on screen, online. It's finally nice to have a conversation with the man behind the Damgram.
I know.
David Milton, welcome to Seasoned.
Thank you.
I did want to talk a little bit about, just for the listeners, what is the Damgram and what is the Damtalk? And like, if you could, describe what you do in the social media space.
Sure. So the Damgram and the Damtalk are the platforms that I use for the videos that I create. Just so people know, the DAM are just my initials. I'm not, no profanity. My mom would not like that. They're just the initials she gave me. So if you want to blame someone, blame her.
It has a ring to it, though.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So is it a hobby, a passion, a service? What exactly is this?
It's a combination of all of those things. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a passion for sure. I enjoy exploring the state and finding new places, and it's a passion to like help small businesses grow. So, you know, and I just enjoy it.
And so what y'all don't realize in the studio is how like real poised and polite David is
and
in
my
most
hands
spaces.
Are...
He's so poised. And so and you did say earlier you were a shy person.
Yeah.
But I don't know how shy you must be with 100,000 plus followers, right? Like
I don't know how that happened.
So
know.
What was it, what motivates you to stretch outside of your comfort zone and put yourself out there for that level of consumption as a shy person?
I don't know. I think I I always try to let the food speak as much as possible. I put myself there so that people can make that connection with me. And I think people have always asked for it. So it's like, well, where are you? What are, we want to see you eating. So, you know, it's just, I guess, me kind of responding. But as it's gone and grown, it's become kind of its own thing, which is fun.
How do you decide who to feature?
I try to create a priority list. So for me, it's small businesses, brand new businesses. They, for me, kind of get the top priority. They're at the top of my list. And so I'm always constantly searching. And as much as things are going on in the state, whether it's economically or, you know, just kind of with costs rising, there are still constantly new businesses and restaurants opening up and some unfortunately closing, but a lot are opening up as well. So I get to prioritize those guys first.
So how much planning goes into production?
I don't plan a lot, you know, like that Mike Tyson quote where he says everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. I try not to go in with a plan because every time I try to do a plan, it fails. So I take a much different approach. I kind of have things I want to do or feature, but I kind of go in more with the mindset of I'm going to accept what they can give me, whether it's they have the time to, you know, slow down and redo a shot or whether they're just working and I'm just capturing that moment.
So you don't put a lot of plans into the production as far as like how to curate the content. But when it comes to even booking a restaurant, do you show up unannounced? Do they invite you over? Is it
That's a good question. It's a bit of both. I like to show up unannounced because to me that feels a little bit more organic. And then that way I can assess whether or not the restaurant is really something I want to promote because it's like, I don't want to show up and they know who I am and then it's like, oh, everything is perfect. And then when someone else goes, it's a much different experience. So I'd rather have a more natural experience that other people might have.
That's a very, very common sense and I think it's being shared is trying to catch the organic experience mm-hmm. and not the media experience.
Yeah.
I know personally my friend Chantel from Little Patty Shop, you stopped by her store and she didn't see you recording.
No.
And so when you popped out her video, she was super grateful.
I'm a ninja with my camera sometimes.
What do restaurant owners and chefs tell you about the impact you have on their restaurants?
A lot of them are incredibly grateful. I think for me, there are a lot of like great moments and a lot of like awesome things people are constantly doing every day. And sometimes when you're in the middle of doing it, you don't see it that way. But when you see, like, I come and capture it and you see it, it kind of gives it a new light, kind of like a new perspective of the greatness of what they do. They do it so simply sometimes. I'm like, whoa, 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 stop. Do that again. You know, they don't think of it. They don't think of it as anything. They just think of it as just like, I'm just working. But, you know, to me, it's just like a great moment to capture and to share with everyone.
So you capture these entrepreneurs in the thick of their craft being great at what they mm-hmm. do. But there's the other side of it, which are your followers and the people that watch your videos. How do your followers talk about how have you impacted their dining experiences? I'm sorry.
No, that's good. I have a lot of people who say, I try everything you post or I try to get to as many places as you post. And I think it's great because, like I said, the state is so small, but we have a really good dining scene, you know. Hence, you know, the governor signing a proclamation saying, you know, Connecticut's the foodie capital of New England. I think with a lot more attention coming to the state, I think people are starting to realize there's a lot more kind of outside of their bubble. I think we all live in our own bubble, right, in our neighborhood or places surrounding our jobs where we go every day and then we go home and then maybe there's a place we go to eat. But kind of expanding that and kind of encouraging people to travel kind of outside of their bubble or go somewhere that might be close that they never seen. You know, people go to places that they're like, I passed that all the time. I never thought to go there.
Legit.
You know.
And that's for everybody who's listening that thinks there's nothing to do in Connecticut. If you follow the yeah. damn gram or the damn talk, you will find something to do. And so in the spirit of you being the, you know, person to watch for when it comes to what's up and coming or what's worthwhile, do you have some like top three favorites, top two favorites that you might want a shout out?
Oh, man. Putting me on the spot. One of my favorite restaurants, fine dining restaurants, is the Essex in Old Saybrook. Chef Colt Taylor has been doing a remarkable job for years. carefully crafting chef menus, and he does tastings, and one of the only chefs that I know that changes the menu probably every 30 days.
Hmm.
Like, he's doing something different, something new, something in season, out of season, something fresh, something from a different country. It's a dining experience, I should say. So I love that. Recently, I went to Craven Dogs.
I've heard of them.
So Darlene and John, they are absolutely incredible. And that
are they new?
They're not new, but I did do a video on them, and that kind of brought a lot more attention to them. And then, you know, other media people kind of picked up on it, which was great that they were getting that attention. And it's just like this mashup of classic American hot dog and hamburgers, but they're like flavoring them with like Caribbean and Jamaican flavors, which pair beautifully. It's like this small little truck. And they're a mom and pop operation. They've been married 20 years. This like beautiful little couple. You go there, they treat you like your family. It's always a smile, and the food is just amazing. And that was a place that I've been to that I was very excited to share with people, and happy to see it get traction and kind of attention, which was great.
So those are your top two. So it sounds like the way you describe food, because I talk to people about food all day. This is like my house. And it's very rare where I speak to somebody in this space that has this intimate connection to not only the experience, but the people behind the experience, the outcomes, the creativity that goes into the experience.
Yeah.
How much of that is a value of yours as it pertains to even your own craft?
It's incredibly important. I think, you know, making the connection, that's the biggest part of food, right? Like food, like I grew up in a Caribbean home where, and most people who grew up sort of with brown parents or from immigrants, you know, if you don't know, like brown parents and immigrant parents don't say the word, I love you. It's not often, right?
It's shown differently.
It's shown differently. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's shown through food.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that connection of, it's not, I'm sorry or I love you. It's like, did you eat? Are you hungry? I made your favorite food. Like that's sometimes people's ways of saying they love you.
Mm-hmm.
And making the connection with chefs or restaurant owners, you kind of get their story behind why they do what they do. And they express it through their food. And you know, that connection is a big part of food as it relates to kind of like how we receive it, right? Because like everyone thinks their mom makes the best food, right?
Of course.
But it's really not necessarily that your mom's like a celebrity chef. I'm sorry to burst the bubble. It's the connection you have, right? It's the love. It's sort of the nourishment that she's giving to you that you receive, and that makes the whole experience kind of what it is. So
speaking of the love, you show a lot of videos, and it seems like you only promote what you love. You made a very intentional decision to not share negative reviews. What was the thought behind that?
There's already enough negativity, I feel, in the world. And even within the space, you know, and I get it. There's a space for everyone, but I try to always sort of lead with love. One of the most important things about restaurants and businesses is I see people are very critical of them via comments or, you know, when they do their reviews, one star or whatever. But I look at it from a very different perspective of a restaurateur or a person who owns a business is a risk taker. They're in that top 1% of people who talk about it but actually do it. They're living their dream. They're doing what they said they would do. They're trying to support their family with, you know, their dream. I'm not going to discourage that or disparage that in any way. You know, I try to find the light, right? I think no matter where I go, if I don't like something, I can always find something that I like. Always find something that I like.
Plenty outside.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, it's been an absolute delight sharing the space with you and learning more about what you do. I can't say enough how much I appreciate the thoughtfulness, the absolute care that you put into the work that you do, but also that you pour into the people you work with and the communities that you work in. So it's an absolute honor to be here with you today. Thank you for sharing this time.
Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. I think this is awesome to highlight places. I don't think I'm that special, so I appreciate, please, you know, that you would even consider me. You guys are all amazing. So thank you.
Thank you.
Before we wrap, David had one last bit of encouragement for all of our food-loving listeners.
Explore the state, you know, explore the state. A lot of times people are like, well, how do you find this place? It's not me. I don't go everywhere. But I have amazing people who follow me, who make suggestions, and I'll do my research. And usually if it's really nice, I'll try to feature it. But if you live in the state, explore it. Try something new. Try a different cuisine. You know, just explore it.
Amen. I'm hungry now.
That was producer Catrice Claudio laughing with David Milton. Want to see videos of David's favorite eats around the state?
You can go ahead and hit the follow button. I'll be nice. No, just
He's at The Damn Gram on Instagram and at The Damn Talk on TikTok. I'm Robin Doyon Aiken. After a short break, meet the Aslam siblings. Their new coffee shop in New Haven started as a virtual community on Instagram.
The purpose behind every cup of coffee we sell is to bring unity, to bring happiness. We want to bring everyone together in one safe place.
You're listening to Seasoned on Connecticut Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Seasoned. I'm Robin Doyon Aiken. Next up, a brand new cafe in New Haven that has its roots on social media. Muslims of the World, MOTW for short, started as a community on Instagram. Its goal is to uplift positive stories of Muslim people, and they've raised millions for humanitarian causes around the world. Its founder is Sajjad Shah. He's based in Indiana. Sajjad turned his idea for an online community into brick-and-mortar coffee shops in Indiana and Illinois. Sajjad and his wife, Fatima, are family friends of the Connecticut-based Aslam siblings. Bilal, Usama, Zeneb, and Ijalal opened their MOTW coffee and pastries in New Haven this January. The shop's slogan is Coffee with a Purpose. Producer Tegan Engel talks with three of the four siblings about that purpose and the shop's traditional chai. Fatima's grandmother, who lives in Waterbury, passed down the chai's method and recipe to the Aslams. That chai is an MOTW specialty.
Bilal Aslam and his siblings make the chai served at the shop. Their traditional chai is from Yemen, and it's different from the overly sweet kind you'll find at most American cafes. It's brewed using loose leaf tea and fresh ground cardamom.
Small iced chai, small hot chai.
Thank you for having me here.
Thank you, Tegan. It's a pleasure having you here, and we're excited.
Bilal steps behind the counter and starts to brew the fresh chai. It's cooked in small batches throughout the day. That's how it's done both in Yemen and Pakistan, where the family is from. Now we're stirring all the ingredients together.
We're going to simmer this, and then we're going to add our evaporated milk and let it continue to simmer.
Okay. Once it's done simmering, the chai is strained to remove the tea leaves and spices. It looks so rich and creamy. There are a few more finishing touches, but those are family secrets. When the chai is ready to drink, I take a sip. And it's everything I hoped it would be, creamy but not too rich, perfectly spiced, and only slightly sweet. Warm chai in hand, I find a quiet spot with the Aslam siblings to learn more about the cafe. Bilal's brother Usama starts by describing the inspiration behind MOTW coffee and pastries.
So what inspired us was, first and foremost, our passion and our love for coffee, and also because of what this brand stands for is unity and diversity and inclusivity of all peoples, irrespective of your background, your religion, your color of your skin. And that's part of the reason why we brought this cafe to New Haven downtown and to bring that same energy here.
The cafe started through the Muslims of the World Instagram account first, right? Can you tell me about that?
So the Muslims of the World page on Instagram is a nonprofit organization that was started by the owner, Sajjad Shah, about 10 years ago. where they did a lot of charity work around the world, one being cataract surgery for people in need, and also breast cancer screening for many women in Kenya and Syria. And that's still an ongoing initiative, as he, you know, opened up a for-profit coffee shop about 2 to 3 years ago with four locations in Indiana, one in Chicago, and us being the first franchise in the East Coast or in the nation in New Haven, Connecticut.
Can you tell me, though, the Muslims of the World Instagram, what was the original inspiration around that?
Hi, this is Zainab. The Instagram page started as Muslims of the World, and it was just a way for them to share different stories about Muslims around the world. So there would be Muslims in Central Park, New York, and different states like Indiana, and they would just share stories about Muslims and what their experience has been like living in the United States. The main point of this is to bring and shed a positive light on Muslims. People do have respect for our religion and how diverse it is, but then there's also misconceptions fueled by the media. And so this has been an experience to show Muslims in a better light and show that we are about unity.
What have some of your experiences been as people who are Muslim in America? And how has the Muslims of the World community been helpful to you?
So I can speak on behalf of myself. My name is Usama. And, you know, after everything that has gone on in the past 20, 25 years, being a Muslim and having that name was tough, you know, getting a lot of backlash and just being misunderstood just because of my name and not who I really was and what my religion really is all about. That was a tough time during my life, being bullied and, you know, just being misrepresented as a Muslim just due to my name. So Now, you know, being able to have a platform where we can really shed a positive light on what Muslims are really about and what we really do stand for and not what the media has misconstrued.
How is it affecting you to go from now having a physical space that is part of this Muslims of the World community? You have a cafe now, like a brick and mortar cafe. How is that affecting your feeling of being Muslim and in community?
Having a physical cafe allows for more physical interaction with people, and they can actually see our actions and not just our words. And our personalities can be exhibited through our physical interaction with the customers that come in, and providing them a very hospitable environment and a welcoming environment into our cafe as Muslims.
So let's talk about your beautiful cafe. Up on the wall when you walk in, there's a sign that says, "Coffee with a Purpose." Bilal, can you tell me what you mean by that?
The purpose behind every cup of coffee we sell is to bring unity, to bring happiness, and to bring inclusivity for every person, as Osama earlier mentioned, of different background, color. We want to bring everyone together in one safe place. In addition to that, with the nonprofit organization, some of the proceeds does go back to our nonprofit organization. So we continue to do good for the world, give back to the country that needs the most, and help people in need.
Let's talk about the coffee. Zainab, can you tell me a little about the special coffees that you have in your shop?
Yeah, so we have a ton of specialty coffees, the most popular one being the Biscoff Latte. If you've ever had the Lotus Biscoff cookies, it's like that in a cup. We also have a date cardamom latte and a rose cardamom latte. We make the cardamom syrups in-house, the rose cardamom being my favorite one. We have like a nice variety of pastries from baklava, like different types of baklavas. And then our fan favorite, most favorite, is the honeycomb pastry that is locally made by one of our Yemeni friends. It's like a dough filled with cream cheese, topped with honey and black seeds. And then we also drizzle more honey on it for our customers when they walk in.
And I ate this because I saw it and it looked amazing. Yeah. And it's served warm. And the dough is in little balls and all put together. So it's really beautiful. And it's kind of like a pull apart bread. It's a really special treat you have. So I know your family is from Pakistan, right? Mm-hmm. And will you tell me a little bit about where you grew up?
Yeah. Bilal and Usama actually were both born in Pakistan. Faisalabad, Pakistan, that's where my family is from. Myself and Ijlal were born in America, but we were really close with our roots and we go back almost every year.
And where did you grow up in Connecticut?
We moved to New York and then we moved to Connecticut, Waterbury. That's where we actually met Sajjad's wife, Fatima, and then we moved to Southington.
So there's something else special about Fatima that I want to ask Bilal about, which is that you all make this really special fresh brewed chai. And it comes, I believe, from her family. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's the traditional Yemeni chai. The recipe originated from Fatma's grandmother. So we grew up drinking that on the daily when we attended mosque. And we're always asking her for the recipe, but never got it. But eventually, when we were able to open up the shop, we were able to secure that secret recipe and share that not with just ourselves, but with our customers and people around the New Haven and all over Connecticut. So that's where it originated from. And it's probably one of the best chais I've had.
That's great. Yeah, there's very few people who do this. So tell me, what is special about it?
I mean, other than making it with love and passion, I think what makes it different is using fresh ingredients and making it fresh daily for our customers to enjoy and not using anything past like an hour. It's a traditional chai and not any sort of other chais or tea bags that people use. I think that's what makes us a little more special than others.
So I know you have a special mural on the wall that is connected to this chai. Can someone describe that mural?
So we have our big mural on our wall, and that is a representation of us. It portrays Pakistan, essentially. So the big truck, those are in Pakistan everywhere. And so that's why we wanted to bring some of our roots into our shop to show people who we are. And we also have a chai wala, which you will find all over Pakistan, because chai is very, very popular in Pakistan. People drink it multiple times a day. Any given moment, they'll drink chai. So there's always stands everywhere around Pakistan. So chai walas are usually sitting there making chai for people.
And they're the people who make the chai and sell it.
Yes, yeah. Just like us. Yeah. And then also our chai wala has a scarf around his neck. And that is stems from our late grandfather. He used to wear that red scarf, and we wanted to put that part of our mural.
That's beautiful. I love that you have that mural and then you're making the chai fresh. It's really special. So I have one last question. Muslims of the World, the nonprofit organization, does a lot of helping around the world. I'm curious about how you're thinking about being part of this community and what kinds of things you're already doing or planning to do in this community.
And this is Osama. So before we even opened, actually, we donated winter gear to the local soup kitchen in New Haven. And we built a relationship with them where we can continue giving back to them, whether it's a food drive, clothing drive. And we do plan on hosting events. We have a space big enough where we can have these events and host these events with different organizations and, you know, give back to the local community. And then also just expanding outside of the local community. You know, we've actually built multiple water wells in Pakistan, our home country, where we actually grew up in a very small village with a lack of water. And now the people have access to clean water on a daily basis. And we want to continue that, not just in Pakistan, but other third world countries, in providing them access to necessities that we need on a daily basis.
Well, I love so much that you've opened this cafe. And just before we go, what has brought you the most joy about opening this cafe so far?
This is Osama. So I would say the biggest joy with opening this coffee shop is meeting people and meeting new people every single day, building that relationship and making that connection with people, no matter their backgrounds, and just, you know, listening to their stories. You know, we get caught up in conversations while we're making their drinks. And it's just something unique and different that I can experience on a daily basis. It opens up my eyes to different stories that people bring and what they stand for.
And this is Bilal. It was a good question because I was thinking about it the other day. What makes me happy? And honestly, just seeing my family proud and my siblings and I getting closer and building a stronger bond. And just seeing a smile on my parents and my kids and my wife's face and allowing me to radiate that energy to our customers that come in is just what keeps me going.
The biggest thing that's brought me joy is just giving people a safe place to be. Like, amount of people that have come in and just have thanked us for giving them a safe space. Like, we have Muslim people coming in and just praying in like different corners of our shop. And that has been like the best thing to see, you know, like, and they'll like stutter a little bit like, oh, can you turn the music down? And we run because we're praying in the back too. So we know when it's time to pray. And I think that that has been like the most beautiful thing to see is just the smiles on like these students' faces when they can just come to a place that feels like home. Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
We've met so many different people from different backgrounds, and it's been like the most heartwarming thing by far.
Wonderful. I do have to ask you though, really quick. You have one brother who's not here. Is he going to be upset that you didn't say something about him? What, do you need to say something to represent?
I think one thing he would like to say is one love, stay positive, and keep coming to our coffee shop. We out.
That was producer Tegan Engel talking with Bilal, Usama, and Zeynep Aslam, three of the four siblings who co-own MOTW Coffee and Pastries in New Haven. And MOTW is the acronym for Muslims of the World. We'll link to them on our show page, ctpublic.org/seasoned. I'm Robin Doyon Aiken. Seasoned is produced by me and Tegan and
Meg Dalton,
Stephanie Stender,
Catrice Claudio,
Meg Fitzgerald,
Scout Raimondo,
Sabrina Herrera,
Francesca Fontanez, and Shanice Rule are on our social team as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. On the next episode of Seasoned, it's maple syrup season, and there are maple sugar festivals happening all around the state over the next 2 weekends. Visit the Stanford Museum and Nature Center Sunday, March 10th. And the Wells Shipman Ward House in South Glastonbury is having their Maple Sugar Madness event on March 17th. I want to meet you back here at 2 p.m. on Thursday, March 21st. I head out to the forest where students from the Independent Day School in Middlefield teach me all about the maple syrup they make as part of science class.
The favorite part about sap is, well, eating it.
Don't miss it.